On the Saturday night after Donald Trump's stunning presidential victory over Hillary Clinton, Saturday Night Live decided to forego its mandate, humor, in favor of a full-on political wake. Kate McKinnon, who has done a creditable job mocking Clinton for most of the election cycle, led off the show with a full rendition of the recently deceased Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. There were zero laughs and lots of delicious, delicious celebrity tears. McKinnon wasn't the only one crying, by the way. Lady Gaga, who introduced Clinton at her last pre-election rally, apparently wept openly backstage as Clinton lost on election night. So did Cher. Katy Perry was so overcome, she then skipped singing the national anthem and actually donated a bunch of money to Planned Parenthood. True story. Lena Dunham of Girls, and bragging about sexually abusing her sister in her memoir fame, she penned an open letter, quote, "I touched my face and realized I was crying. Can we please go home? I said to my boyfriend. I could tell he was having trouble breathing, and I could feel my chin breaking into hives. At home, I got in the shower and began to cry even harder. My boyfriend, who had already wept, watched me as I mumbled incoherently, clutching myself." To put it mildly, or to put it slightly less mildly, the left spent its time during this election cycle lecturing Americans from the Hollywood Hills. It didn't work. After years of President Obama traipsing into studios in L.A. to read mean tweets, after nearly a decade of listening to the sophomoric, unearned moral superiority of actors and actresses who earn millions for reading lines other people write, after watching 9/11 truther rappers go to the White House, Americans said no to celebrity culture by electing a celebrity, because that's what we do. The great irony of Trump's victory is that he was actually an anti-celebrity celebrity. He had all the perks of celebrity, but he reveled in them. He didn't try to claim he was a better human being than the white middle-class voters in Wisconsin by virtue of living in New York in a penthouse covered in gold leaf. Trump played the everyman on television, and it worked. Meanwhile, celebrities who didn't grow up in tremendous wealth hobnobbed with the elites. Singers and actresses taped a fight song rendition for the DNC. Dunham appeared on stage at the convention, sans her sister. Beyonce and Jay-Z campaigned for Clinton. So did Bruce Springsteen. And all of them did so for a woman whose closest contact with flyover country came during one highly choreographed stop at Chipotle. Americans may never get over their obsession with celebrity, but they sure don't want to hear those celebrities talk down to them. America has disconnected itself from rural America. And rural Americans were more than willing to punish Hollywood for that grave sin. If Democrats hope to win down the road, they're going to have to do better than trotting out the scornful glitterati. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. Oh, so much to get to today. So much to talk about. First, we have to say hello to our sponsors over at Wink.com. So, if you don't know anything about wine, what a good wine is, what a bad wine is, but you know kind of what you like in terms of food and drink, then go to TryWink.com. TryWink.com. It's spelled W-I-N-C. TryWink.com/Ben. And you get $20 off. The way that it works is you go there, they do a brief survey. They say kind of what foods do you like, and then they recommend wines that are based on the kinds of foods you like and the kind of dinner you're expecting to have. So they do all the expertise work for you. Their wine apparently is really good. Everybody at the office has tried it. They're all drunk all the time from Wink Wine, which is why the podcast is so bad. But try wink.com/Ben is the place to go, W-I-N-C.com. They brand their own wine. They make it. And apparently, according to all the people at the office, it is indeed top-notch. $20 off right now, and it's personalized to your palate. So it's not just you ordering wine. It's actually personalized to the kind of wine that you'll like, and it is a pretty spectacular service. Try wink.com/Ben. Okay, lots and lots to get to today here on The Ben Shapiro Show. So first of all, got to give you the update from what happened at DePaul. So last night, DePaul University, I'm supposed to speak there, and the way that we were working this is, as you recall, 6 months ago, there's a big hubbub at DePaul because Milo Yiannopoulos spoke at DePaul. And a bunch of the students rushed the stage, and they took over the stage, and they were yelling at him, and the security didn't do anything. And then the administration decided to fire the president of the university, basically, for having allowed that lecture, and they issued a blanket ban not only on Milo, but on me. And I wasn't even there. I didn't do anything. But they didn't like the fact that there was a riot, near riot, at Cal State LA when I spoke there, and at Penn State when I spoke there, and they said, we just can't handle this. We just can't handle this. So they issue this blanket ban. So the Young Americans Foundation chapter, they go to the administration, they say, we'd like to have Shapiro speak. And the administration says, nah. And so instead what they do is they set up a lecture with Christina Hoff Sommers, who's a wonderful, fabulous human being. Love Christina. And she's the anti-third wave feminist professor. And they have her come and speak. And she was going to be accompanied by me. So halfway through, she was going to hand over the microphone to me, and we were going to do an event to get around the ban. So DePaul finds out about this a couple of days beforehand, and they say, we're going to shut down the event unless you ban Shapiro, unless you re-ban Shapiro. So they say, okay, well, what if Shapiro just, he's already here, what if Shapiro just comes as a guest and listens to Christina Hoff Sommers? And the administration says, no, he can't even be in the room. He can't even come into the room. We're not going to allow that. And they say, well, what if he comes as a member of Christina's team, like just the people who hang around with her? No, they wouldn't allow that either. So the situation yesterday when I did the podcast was that the administration was literally threatening to arrest me if I walked onto campus. They were literally threatening to arrest me if I walked onto campus. So the way that we worked it was this. Christina went inside the hall, and she started her speech, and then I came up afterward because I wanted to see if these people were actually serious about shutting down free speech. I'm giving a speech, by the way, about free speech, right? The speech is actually about free speech, and I wanted to see if they were actually willing to arrest me. Turns out they were, because fascism is alive and well on America's college campuses. Here is the video of what happened last night at DePaul University. How are you?
I'm the dad.
Nice to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you. You know that you weren't registered, whatever, for the group didn't register you for an event. They have strict things, so you're not allowed, you know, into the event.
Well, I mean, YAF did inform you that I was coming as a speaker, as a person sitting in the audience, as well as a member of Christina Hoff Sommers' team, so... I'm not sure whether their standards are necessary. I'm also wondering exactly why it's so necessary to keep me personally out.
We're just following protocol, sir.
Well, why is your protocol to keep me specifically out?
What country protocol? Soviet Union or United States?
Do you want to step over here and decide?
Well, I'm happy to do it right here if you'd like. I mean,
it doesn't have to
be private.
The bottom line is it's private property, okay? That proper procedures weren't followed, then you're not going
to
be allowed.
So am I to understand that if I take 3 steps forward, you will attempt to have me arrested?
If you create a problem and you will not, you know, leave the campus, yes.
Okay, so just to be clear, if I attempt to enter that hall right there and sit down just to listen to somebody speak, or if I attempt to ask a question or to engage in free speech, you will have me arrested.
At this point, yes, sir.
Okay, then I'm glad that we've clarified that situation. I'm also glad that in a city, I mean, clearly you have great security. I'm glad in a city that has some 4,000 shootings to this date, you have 30 members of security just for a 59165 Jewish guy. Just like maybe a mild allocation of resources. Well, okay. Well, if that's the way we're going to do this, then we'll just do the event elsewhere, folks. So yeah. Follow us.
Media.
Here we go.
Yes! Yes!
We love you, man.
This giant crowd, and we walked over to a theater that was about 4 blocks away, and we did the event there. I Skyped into Christina in the hall, and she said, okay, everybody up and out. Everybody got up, walked off the DePaul campus, and went somewhere where they're not fascist. It is an amazing thing, right? It wasn't that they were banning me because I didn't have an RSVP. They knew I was coming, clearly. That's why the security was there, right? It wasn't like they weren't aware. By the way, how many protesters were there? How many protesters? They had to protect the protesters from me. Right. That was the idea. I'm a very violent person. As you come to know me over the course of the last year, I love violence so much that I've denounced every candidate who has engaged in any violent rhetoric the entire campaign. But I am a deep threat. I mean, I've got the karate skills. Oh, yeah. So they were afraid that I was going to just start jumping on people and wailing on them or something. So in any case, I go there, the Jewish Chainsaw Massacre. I show up. And they literally have 30 security guards, and the sheriff from Cook County is there as well. Because the way that this works, legally speaking, is campus security can't actually arrest anybody. They can detain me. Then they have to have the sheriff take me to jail. So they actually had brought the sheriff of Cook County there just for me. I felt very special. So they had 30 members of security, plus a sheriff from Cook County, and about 5 cops were sitting in a cop car down the street just for little old me. And I have to admit, and I never thought of myself as a security threat that way. It's kind of empowering. They thought I was going to turn into the Hulk and turn green and wear purple pants, but it is amazing. And again, there were this many protesters, there were zero protesters, none, nada, zilch, no protesters at all. But they've internalized the demands of the rioters and the protesters so much that they didn't arrest any of the rioters and protesters when they destroyed Milo's speech 6 months ago. There weren't any tonight, but the administration still threatened to arrest me if I had tried to step onto the campus. So, you know, there are people saying that I should have gotten myself arrested just for the shtick of it. Okay, first of all, I'm not going to get arrested just for the sake of getting arrested, because it was clear they were going to arrest me. They had one of the people there was actually suggesting the reason that fellow you see there, the security guy, was attempting to bring me aside in that tape is he wanted to get me over onto the grass off a public walkway. He wanted to actually have me step over onto the grass, and at that point, everybody tackles me. I was not interested In doing that, also, I was not interested in not having cameras there. Cameras are wonderful. They make clear to everybody exactly what's going on. But that's the nature of campus fascism in today's America. Today, I'm scheduled to speak at University of Wisconsin-Madison. Apparently, there are three separate groups that are going to be doing protests, which is just fine. I'm happy to have protesters. That's free speech. But they are also very, very upset that the speech is open to the public. Apparently, it's going to be a packed hall. It's like 500 seats, and it's supposed to be packed. And they're very upset that members of the general public want to come. And so lefties are trying to shut down the event on the grounds that the general public shouldn't be allowed to come. So that's the way this works now. Free speech on college campuses is dead. Megyn Kelly was kind enough to have me on her show last night, and here's how that looked.
Here we go again, Ben. Here we go again. It's incredible how, I mean, time after time, these college campuses won't even let you speak because you get shouted down by intolerant people when you try to go, and then they say it's a security concern.
Yeah, it really is amazing. This one was actually particularly amazing because there wasn't a protester anywhere in sight. So you had 30 security people.
But they could,
and a
they could picture one in their heads.
Right, exactly. So they'd actually internalized the rioters so well that now they could actually reflect them back out to the world. They're tolerant of anything except somebody actually giving a speech on the topic of free speech. That is the actual topic
can
of
we
speech
just
that I was
say that again. Say that
give.
Again.
The speech that I was giving was about free speech, and they are tolerant enough to ban it. So that was exciting.
It's unbelievable. You were not allowed to speak about free speech at all. This is what modern-day university campuses have come to. Not in all cases. There's the University of Chicago that denied people their safe spaces. But in this case, so you showed up there to make a point about free speech, and you were arrested. Now, does this have any public dollars coming its way, this university?
I don't know. It's a private university, which is why I didn't actually just attempt to walk right past security. If it's a public university, then I would have done so under my First Amendment rights.
Exactly.
It's a private university. So once they'd made clear that I would be arrested if I took two steps forward, then what I did instead is Christina Hoff Summers, who joined me at this lecture, she actually Skyped me into the lecture hall.
Oh.
And then we told everybody in the lecture hall to get up and walk out. And we all walked over to a theater that was about three blocks away and did the event anyway.
What do the kids who... If there are kids who are protesting, young adults, your presence, say, do you know?
Well, I mean, I think that they're just offended by anybody who has a differing point of view. I mean, I'm speaking tomorrow at University of Wisconsin in Madison, and one of the key reasons that they're protesting me, apparently the big protests are planned, is because I'm pro-Trump, which is weird since I wasn't. So they're just making things up. Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. So. And then they will let controversial figures from the left come and speak. It's just not somebody who's got strong views from the right. We've seen it so many times. Ben, good for you for trying. Thanks for being here.
Okay, so it was fun and games. Over at University of Wisconsin-Madison, apparently the hubbub has started. This is a letter from a state senator in Wisconsin. You ready for this? This is breaking news. State senator in Wisconsin, Dewey Strobel, he just wrote this letter directly to the folks at University of Wisconsin-Madison. It says, quote, "For weeks, the Young Americans for Freedom at UW-Madison have been meticulously planning an event with conservative commentator and New York Times bestselling author Ben Shapiro. In recent days, the campus conservatives have come under attack from ultra-left agitators. These liberals have invited hundreds to a private Facebook group page titled F White Supremacy, Interrupting Ben Shapiro. Now, a complaint has been filed against the organization stating they broke a university policy by advertising the event to the public. In an advising meeting, Center for Leadership and Involvement staff advised the conservatives that student organization events are open only to the campus community, students, faculty, and staff, and in order to open an event to the public, an apartment must sponsor. The staff also informed the students a portion of the complaint alleges the group targeted a member of the campus community by sharing a publicly available Facebook post. While opposing students are filing frivolous grumbles to the staff, it appears the university is welcoming to protesters, however, not members of the public looking to listen to Mr. Shapiro. Senator Strobel said, at a taxpayer-funded university, Madison should make efforts to have more events open to the public. It is important student organizations have the ability to, without cumbersome red tape, host events to include the public. Every time university officials lobby my office for more taxpayer resources, they argue how important the school is to the state. Student organizations should have the freedom, without fear of complaints, to create a larger discussion within the broader public community. The CFLI, which is the staff, should dismiss this grievance as baseless. Complaints are not to be used as a weapon against organizations with different viewpoints. Amazing, amazing, amazing stuff. But this is the way it works on college campuses. Look, I wasn't for Trump. You want to know why Trump won? It's because of bullcrap like this. This is the reason Trump won. People just got sick of all the nonsense that the left was pushing, the safe spaces, and the shut it all down, and the political correctness. All of that nonsense that's gone by the wayside. Americans just aren't interested in it anymore. And that I can certainly appreciate about the Trump campaign and about the support for Trump, because it is clear that across the country, the left, the fascistic left, is interested in shutting down anything remotely resembling freedom of discussion. Now, along those lines, I think that it is important to note that the media continue to make absolute asses of themselves. It is amazing. You know, I keep saying it because I think that it's important to point out where my biases are. I'm not a person who backed Donald Trump in the primaries or in the general election. So when I say that the media are targeting Trump, I think that you can take that with full honesty, right? I don't have an interest in propping up Trump. I have an interest in him succeeding as a conservative. That would be great. But I don't have an interest in BSing for him as so many others do. When I say the media are out to get this guy, they are out to get this guy, and they're doing it in the stupidest possible way. So, for example, Chris Matthews, I don't have anything to say. Man comes out of his shoe, gets up in the morning, running in the studio. Then he looks at the telepresence, oh my God, John Bolton's going to be Secretary of State. This is crazy. John Bolton, tingling up my leg, John Bolton, he's got a mustache. What kind of mustache does that look like? A walrus? Chris Matthews, MSNBC, go.
Trump Watch, November 14th. 2016. I can feel much of the country's mood right now. On Saturday Night Live, Kate McKinnon sang Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, and then again on church on Sunday night, the choir sang it again. Because much of America is in a soulful mood right now, but some of it's all right, or actually downright scared. Our son was marching in this weekend protest against the election, and right through this, I try hard to do this job. And tonight I worry about the talk that John Bolton might be Trump's choice for Secretary of State. Picking Bolton would have an immediate effect. It would vastly increase the number of people who are sad at what happened last Tuesday and the number of people who are downright scared.
Okay, it's going to scare everybody. It's unbelievable. Picking this Bolton guy with his mustache and his crazy hair. I mean, look at me. Just let me finish. Let me finish. It says so right on the screen. Let me finish. I want to finish. Chris Matthews, MSNBC, Mike Lysakoff, what do you think? Kathleen, get the hotel room ready. I'm coming home, stick my head under a pillow. I'm going to never shower because that messes up my hair too much. Got to brush with a shoe. Chris Matthews, man. Okay, so the point there, of course, is that I love this. Donald Trump is scary enough, but John Bolton is the one who's truly scaring people. It will vastly increase the number of people who are sad. Oh, God, no, not sadness. And somewhere Donald Trump is going, like, I care about your sadness. Your tears nourish me. Yes. But this is the point. The media are so ridiculous that if they're suggesting that Americans are going to be deeply, deeply upset about the appointment of John Bolton, Secretary of State, the former UN ambassador under George W. Bush, this is just nuts. It's just nuts. But the problem is this. The media treated every conservative proposal for the last 15 years, really since Bush was elected in 2000, as anathema and as evil and as Hitlerian. And so now they just have to keep upping the ante, but there's nowhere to up the ante. I mean, Trump is as bad as it's going to get for them in terms of somebody who they hate, but they're still trying to up the ante to John Bolton. It just doesn't wash. It doesn't wash. It's like what these protesters are trying to do at these campuses. Donald Trump's super, super scary, but Shapiro's even scarier. In what world? No one believes that. What are you talking about? Okay, that's just one aspect of the media losing their mind and destroying their own credibility. Here's another one. The media lost their mind yesterday because Donald Trump ditched them and went out to dinner with his family at a steakhouse. Okay, so there's something called, I guess, the emergency press pool. And what that means is that there's always somebody from the press traveling with Trump in case there's an emergency. Like, let's say that he were out to dinner and suddenly there were a nuclear attack or something. Okay, first of all, he's the president-elect. He can't do anything yet, right? He's just the president-elect. But he ditches them and he goes to have a steak dinner and the media lose their minds. Like, Americans care about this. Here are the media just going nuts over it.
The president-elect just left without telling pretty much anyone anything. Is that right?
That is correct. His press pool was given a lid for the evening, which normally suggests that Donald Trump isn't going anywhere. He's sticking around Trump Tower. But Trump apparently had other plans. He decided to go out to dinner without alerting some of his key staffers as well as the press. And it appears to be yet another misunderstanding of exactly how much gravity his new title as president-elect holds. You know, if God forbid something were to happen to him, that is a matter not only of public record, but also a matter of national security, given that he is next in line to take the White House.
Well, indeed, it may seems like.
And then Rachel Maddow does the same thing. They're all going nuts over this. How could it possibly be? How could we possibly let Donald Trump get out of our sights? What a terror. Okay, no one cares. You know how many people in America care that Rachel Maddow and crew couldn't shadow Donald Trump at the dinner? What do they think is going to happen? He's going to get there and he's going to be like, pass the A1 sauce right now. and then someone doesn't pass the A1 sauce, he breaks it off into a jagged edge and then shoves it in their jugular, and then he gets impeached before he's – and this is just silly talk. It's silly. That's not even the limit of it. In one moment, believe it or not, you're going to have to hear me defend Steve Bannon. I know. I can't believe it either, but that's what this media has come to. I'll talk about that in just a second. But first, I have to give a shout out to our sponsors over at Birchgold.com. So Birchgold.com, if you're concerned about the future of the country, if you are concerned that the Fed is going to raise interest rates, the stock market is inflated, the real estate market's inflated, then you need to go over to my friends at Birchgold.com/Ben. It's Birchgold.com/Ben, A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. They'll teach you how to invest in precious metals, and they will also help you get that put your precious metals from get out of your 401k if you want to and put it in precious metals tax-free. Ask all your questions. Make sure that you have all your questions answered, and then invest with my friends over at birchgold.com/Ben. Okay, before we take off, I just have to make one more quick note about the media. The media have wildly overplayed their hands on Steve Bannon. So as one of the leading Bannon critics in America, okay, somebody who worked with Steve Bannon for years, I think that Steve Bannon is a vicious, very bad guy. I think Steve Bannon is vindictive. I think he likes to destroy people. I think it's what he loves to do. I think he also used Breitbart as a way to ingratiate himself with Trump to the point where he undercut his own reporters. And I think that he was happy to allow Breitbart to pander to the alt-right. And the alt-right, as I've said 1,000 times on the show, the alt-right are people who believe that the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, those are passé, and instead what we need is a Eurocentric white nationalism. So does that mean that he is an anti-Semite? No. Does it mean Breitbart is a white nationalist site? No, it doesn't. It means that they've pandered to white nationalists in some of their writing and in some of the things that they do. They've pandered to some of the people who are warm to Richard Spencer and Jared Taylor and that group. Does that mean the entire site is white nationalist? No, of course not. Does it mean that the entire site is a reflection of V-Dare? No, it doesn't. But the media can't help themselves. They can't help themselves. So instead of just saying, here's what troubles me about Bannon, the hollowing out of traditional conservatism, traditional constitutional conservatism, in favor of European far-right populism, which doesn't care about the size of government, which doesn't worry about the size and scope of government. It just worries most specifically about shutting down the borders and increasing tariffs. That's all they care about, European far-right populism. If that is a problem for you, right? They don't, but they're not criticizing that, right? They're not criticizing that aspect of Bannon. They're not criticizing the aspect of Bannon that he's really vicious and that he may use the government as a method of going after old enemies, considering that he's, again, one of the more vindictive people in the business. No, instead, they have to go full Hitler. They have to go full Hitler. And we'll explain all of that if you go over to dailywire.com if you go over to dailywire.com right now and you subscribe, become a subscriber. It's $8 a month. And that allows you also to get rid of all the ads on the site, which is pretty cool. $8 a month allows you access to the rest of this show live. It allows you the rest of Andrew Klavan's show live. It allows you to become part of the mailbag. If you get an annual subscription right now, you still get a signed copy of my new novel, True Allegiance. So check that out right now over at our website, dailywire.com. Become a subscriber. Become part of the team, part of the largest conservative podcast in America. Okay, so the media, again, they can't help themselves. They have to overplay their hand. So instead of just saying Steve Bannon did something despicable by winking and nodding at the alt-right, which is the same thing that Donald Trump did during the primaries and the general election, instead of just doing that, instead of saying, you know, his language about globalism is troubling, his language about the idea that international trade and free markets, that these things are net bad, that's a problem. Instead of doing that, they immediately jump to, he's a Nazi. Okay, it turns out that Trump is Hitler, but that means that Bannon is super-duper Hitler. He's like three times Hitler. This is so stupid. It's so stupid, and it's just demonstrative of the fact that the media, if you give them any sort of material at all, they will immediately ignore the material that is before them in favor of the more extravagant and not true claim. And not true claim. It's really, really stupid. Okay, so here is Joy Behar doing exactly that on The View yesterday.
To give them something.
You know what scares me? People, I understand the Trump voter to some extent because they're afraid of globalization. They're afraid that their jobs are going overseas, that other people. So what happens is There's a history in the 20th century, the 30s and 40s, and we got into a world war over this because people were afraid and they blamed the other for their problems. And that is what I see somebody like this guy from the alt-right espousing. And it is happening in France. It is happening in Hungary. People are experiencing fear of globalization, and they are turning on their neighbors. This is what fascism looks like. And it scares the hell out of me. And it should scare everybody. So that's why, let me say one more thing to you, honey. Because I know that, you know, you're saying everybody should act nice and be united and watch and what have you. But people are scared. And that is what these protests are about. It's about fear. It's not as much about rage as much as fear, like she describes it and like what I just said.
Well, just to...
Okay, so it's fascism in the White House is what Joy Behar says. Okay, this is nutcasery. It's just insanity. There's plenty of reasons to criticize Steve Bannon. He wants to start an internal war in the Republican Party. He's always sought that. He's somebody who wants to burn it all down. Again, he wants to replace traditional conservatism that has to do with the Constitution, with this alt-right nationalist populism that's popular in Europe. Does that have anything to do with, and it's not quite alt-right nationalist populism that Bannon wants. He just wants nationalist populism, but he'll make common cause with the alt-right to push it if he needs to. If that's not enough of a criticism, I don't know what is, but they need to go all the way. They need to go all the way. And so you get Harry Reid doing the same thing on the floor of the Senate.
What message does Trump send to the young girl who woke up Wednesday morning in Rhode Island afraid to be a woman of color in America? It's not a message of healing. If Trump is serious about seeking unity, the first thing he should do is rescind his appointment with Steve Bannon. Rescind it. Don't do it. Think about this. Don't do it. As long as a champion of racial division is a step away from the Oval Office, it will be impossible to take Trump's efforts to heal the nation seriously. So I say to Donald Trump, take responsibility. Rise to the dignity of the office of President of the United States.
This moron from speaking more. So that's Harry Reid, who is one of the scuzzier members of the United States Senate, and whose mentor was a guy who was actually a member of the KKK, Robert Byrd. It's just inane. It's just inane. Like, if you don't want Bannon in that position, then why don't you critique him on the basis of the things that he said and done? Critique him on the basis of his association with the alt-right. But going this far where he's a Nazi, he's Hitler, I'm now defending Steve Bannon. I, Ben Shapiro, am now defending Steve Bannon because of what the media have done here. Because the media can't just stick to the truth. They always have to go that extra step. They always have to go two steps too far. They always have to skew things because all Republicans are Nazis, which means that Bannon is a super-duper giant Nazi. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. Now, all of that said, Donald Trump continues to be Donald Trump. And I will say this. One of the things that bothers me a little bit already about what's going on with Trump, and I knew it was going to happen, so it bothered me beforehand, which is one of the reasons I didn't vote for him, is that Republicans were going to, all the things that they complained about for the last 10 years, the last 8-10 years from Democrats, they are going to stop complaining about when Trump does it. I do not like hypocrisy. Either the standard exists or the standard does not exist. You don't get to change the standard because the person who is actually breaking the standard is on your side. So Donald Trump yesterday, he decided to do a tweet storm about appointments. There's been all these rumors of chaos inside his campaign. They're probably exaggerated. Who cares anyway? All that matters is who he ends up appointing, not how he gets there. But he felt the need to go on Twitter and tweet storm. Now, if Barack Obama had used his Twitter as just this sort of petty, vindictive, I'm going to rip on the media half the time thing, we all would have ripped on him. We did. I mean, when he went after Fox News and talk radio, we ripped on him. Donald Trump does the same thing, and now it's, oh, well, great for Donald Trump. It's stupid either way. Here's what Donald Trump was tweeting. You can put up some of those tweets. Very organized process taking place as I decide on cabinet and many other positions. I am the only one who knows who the finalists are. So we're now playing The Apprentice America Edition, Celebrity Apprentice America Edition. He says, I'm not trying to get top-level security clearance for my children. This was a typically false news story. Okay, so here's what happened with the story. We talked about it yesterday, that he was going for some top security clearance for his kids. Here's the actual story. So what happened is, apparently, he actually was. Apparently, a low-level staffer requested top-level security, now, or at least a staffer did, right? Originally, they said, this is all nonsense, never happened. Now, they've changed their tune. They said it was a low-level staffer who requested it. Now, again, I remember when it was bad for Republicans, it was bad for politicians to blame low-level staffers. I remember when the IRS blamed low-level staffers for discrimination against conservative 501c3 groups. If it's on our side, it doesn't make it any better. Okay, nepotism on our side does not make the nepotism better. If Hillary Clinton had been elected and her first step was to request security clearance for Chelsea. And then we had found out, and she backed off and she said it was a low-level staffer. Would we let her off the hook? Again, it's such an easy game to play just to make sure that you're an honest person. Just put the shoe on the other foot and see how it fits for just one second. I know we don't want to do that anymore. I know that we have to make sure that Donald Trump is given all of the power we can possibly give him. But I don't care about that. What I care about is that the principles still stand, especially now. Okay, he won already. So you people can get off your high horse about he's not Hillary. I got it. He's not. Congratulations. I'm happy, too, that he's not Hillary. Now, should we hold him to a standard? Or should we just say that because he won, there are no standards anymore, and he can do whatever he damn well pleases? It's just it's silliness to me that we're doing that. You know, and we're doing it all the way across the board. Bashar Assad came out. He said Donald Trump could be our new ally. Bashar Assad, the dictator of Syria. Here's what he had to say.
That's why we were very cautious in judging him, especially as he wasn't in a political position before. So we cannot tell anything about what he's going to do. But if, let's say if he's going to fight the terrorists, of course, we're going to be natural ally in that regard with the Russians, with the Iranians, with many other countries who wanted to defeat the terrorists.
Okay, so you've got Bashar Assad now praising Donald Trump. Now, if Bashar Assad had been praising Barack Obama, how many Republicans would have been all over his ass saying, Bashar Assad is an evil dictator who used chemical weapons on his own people after you drew a red line? Now Bashar Assad is praising Donald Trump. So Trump is the president-elect. Is he going to work in coordination with Bashar Assad and the Russians? Apparently so. Apparently that is his plan, to just hand all over all power to the Russian vicious dictator Vladimir Putin and to work with Iran, right, and with Syria. You can't work with Assad without working with Iran. Assad is just a client state of the Iranian regime. So if this had been Obama, the right wing would have been up in arms, but it's not, so now we're going to pretend that it's all okay. John Boehner, he says that Trump isn't an ideologue, right? Here's John Boehner. Remember, the establishment cuck John Boehner, the one who everybody hated because he was too willing to deal with Barack Obama. Here's John Boehner talking about Trump.
Donald Trump is not an ideologue. You know, I said yes, barely a Republican. And he could be barely a Democrat as well. So nobody really knows where he's going, but he made pretty clear during the campaign of what his issues are. But I would expect things like infrastructure, tax reform, this will surprise you, but immigration reform.
John Boehner looks pretty enthusiastic about Donald Trump, doesn't he? Just yesterday, Paul Ryan was confirmed as Speaker of the House. Mitch McConnell today was confirmed as Senate Majority Leader. Okay, you may like these moves, you may not like these moves, but again, I remember, and so do you, when it was bad, right? These were establishment people. So the double standard is making me a little bit dizzy all the way through. One person I will give credit today is a person with whom I actually disagree, and that is Senator Rand Paul. So Senator Paul, I think, is dead wrong on national security. I think he's dead wrong when it comes to foreign policy. I think that he's an isolationist or tends toward it, and I think that he minimizes the role America needs to take in the world. But Rand Paul came forward. He said, if John Bolton is nominated by Donald Trump for Secretary of State, I will oppose him. Here's what he had to say.
Because John Bolton, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. during the Bush administration, I know you've written very, very sharp words criticizing him. You would be totally opposed. Would you go so far as not to vote to confirm him as Secretary of State if President-elect or President Trump goes ahead and nominates him?
I couldn't vote for Bolton unless he repudiated his support for the Iraq war and repudiated his support for regime change throughout the Middle East, repudiated his call for immediately bombing Iran. I mean, really, you want to have a diplomat in charge of diplomacy. You don't want a bomb thrower. And so, no, John Bolton's totally unfit to be Secretary of State. And I hope that the Trump administration will say, you know what? He does not represent what Donald Trump represents, which is change, and which is the understanding the Iraq war was a mistake and that regime change in the Middle East has been a mistake.
Okay, here's why I'm speaking up in favor of Rand Paul here. At least the man still has principles enough that he's willing to buck Trump if he doesn't agree with him. We'll see if other Republicans are willing to do the same. I hope that they will, because if they don't, then it's going to be a very long 4 years for conservatives under any circumstances. Meanwhile, on the other side, the Democrats continue to scramble. They have no clue what they're doing, and it is fun to watch. So you got some people who seem to get it, like Jim Webb. You remember Jim Webb. He was in the Democrat debates very early on. He's the former senator from I think he's still a senator from West Virginia. And here is Jim Webb saying that the white working class is not voting Democrat because we'll let him explain.
How exactly did the Democrats lose their hold on the white working class, which they claimed for generations?
Well, I've been talking about this since before I even ran. Yeah. And that the base of the Democratic Party used to be working people, regardless of race, ethnic identity, or sexual orientation, et cetera. Yeah. That was the Roosevelt agenda. Exactly. That was the Truman agenda. And over time, and I think particularly over the last 8 years, the Democratic Party had moved into interest group politics. And in many cases, white working people have become the whipping posts, or were. And I think what you saw in this election here is white working people in these rural areas seeing that someone actually was articulating the fact that they had become disenfranchised. And that's why they gravitated toward Trump.
Okay, and he's exactly right. I mean, his take on this, that the Democratic Party has moved toward identity group politics. You remember when he said that, he was one of the only people on stage in the Democrat debate, maybe the only person, who refused to say that Black Lives Matter was an appropriate slogan, right? He refused to kowtow to Black Lives Matter, and the Democratic Party basically booted him out and said, why don't you go run as a Republican? They said that it was that he was too crazy because he had said that he remembers, and somebody said, who's your worst enemy? He said, the guy that I killed in Vietnam. And people went on the Democratic left on, ooh, that's so terrible. That guy is basically a Republican now, or moving toward it. Jim Webb is a perfect example of somebody who used to be a Democrat and is now moving toward being a Republican because of what the Democrats have done. Because of what the Democrats have done. Again, all credit to Trump for at least telling Americans, look, if you disagree with the left, it doesn't make you a racist, sexist, bigot, homophobe. You just disagree with them. You know, that I give all credit to Trump for, and he was doing that throughout the campaign. He was doing a lot of other terrible things throughout the campaign, but that was one thing that he did that I thought was totally worthwhile. Okay, so Jim Webb gives that good advice. Naturally, the left isn't going to take it. Rob Reiner, the director and now, for some reason, political commentator, he's on MSNBC talking about how this was the last vestige of the Civil War. Right, 2016 was the last vestige of 1860.
And I think that's why Trump is hanging on to that last. What I've said is that it's the last fight of the Civil War. It's the last gasp and the last throes of people who are, you know, just desperately hanging on to this kind of white nationalism that existed prior to LBJ passing the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and all of that. I mean, there was racism, there always has been racism in this country, and it was, after the Civil War, a lot of it was seemingly overtly concentrated in the South, although it existed in the North, too. But after Civil Rights Acts were passed, it submerged. It submerged and kind of stayed dormant.
Okay, so, again, this idea that this is just the last vestige of anti-multiculturalism, anti-diversity stuff. Keep doing that. Keep doing that. Leftists, keep doing it, and then assume that Americans won't be put off. There's a Slate writer named Jamel Boy, I think it's pronounced, and he said there's no such thing as a good Trump voter. They're all racists. They're all deplorables. Yeah, good idea, guys. Let's just lump them all together. Let's say that everybody who voted for Trump is a terrible racist person. That's not going to backfire on you in any way. Pretty amazing. Okay, time for some things that I like and then some things that I hate. So, things I like. This is actually one of Tom Wolfe's lesser liked books. A lot of people don't like this book very much. I thought it's actually a good book. It's too long, but the book is telling about the nature of America's college campuses. I decided in honor of DePaul that it was worthwhile recommending this. This, of course, is I Am Charlotte Simmons by Tom Wolfe. A lot of people didn't like this book. I thought that this book was actually really interesting, kind of a story about how a young woman who comes in with traditional values is twisted and turned by a campus that keeps urging her toward the left. And eventually she acts in such a way that she's co-opted by them. And I think it's a true story for a lot of young women, particularly. It's actually a very good book, as I recall. I Am Charlotte Simmons by Tom Wolfe. Okay, other things that I like. Maria Bartiromo on Fox Business, she did a routine with Jonathan Gruber. Jonathan Gruber is, of course, one of the lead advocates for Obamacare, one of the lead creators of Obamacare. And Bartiromo just destroys him. It is phenomenal to watch. Here it is.
Do you dispute economic growth? 10 years after the financial crisis?
Economic growth is the rapidest it's been in 8 years. Okay? Economic growth, we're coming out of a recession, and Obamacare is irrelevant to economic growth. Please, there is no evidence at all. You are making a totally non-facts-based argument. There is no evidence at all that Obamacare has anything to do with economic growth.
Jonathan, it's very hard to believe you after what you said when this law first came out, that Americans are stupid and that you needed a stupid public to get this law through. In fact, let's roll that bite. Listen to this, Jonathan. Here's what you said a few years ago.
Lack of transparency is a huge political advantage. And basically, you know, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever. But basically, that was really, really critical to getting the thing to pass.
So we're stupid, and that's why you were able to pass this legislation through.
Maria, I deeply regret those comments, which are you taking out of context.
What's out of context? We just heard you say it. What is out of context about what you said?
What is out of context is that I was at an academic conference conjecturing about something I shouldn't have been conjecturing about. I made a mistake. I shouldn't have said that.
Okay.
That's absolutely true. That doesn't excuse your denying true facts. You're making up facts, Maria.
Okay, so what did I make up? What did I make up?
You made up the fact that Obamacare has caused job loss. There is no evidence. You made up the fact that
Obamacare... There's 100%
evidence.
No, there is
none. There is... Maria,
all I need are 10 CEOs to come on this show and tell me that's the reason, and then it becomes
fact. Okay, who cares if some CEO comes on the show and tells you that's the reason? Look at the data, Maria. You used the word data. Look at the data. There is not a single data point.
I don't need data when I have the CEO telling me I'm not adding workers because of the cost of Obamacare. That is my data. I just spoke to the boss, and he gave me the reason.
Well, Maria, that is absolutely wrong. That's not how you consider data. Data is considered by actually looking at the facts on the ground. And the facts
are... The facts on the ground are the managers of businesses, the people who are actually making hiring decisions, and why they are not putting new jobs in their company because it's too expensive to do so, because of Obamacare. That's data, Jonathan. For you to say that what a CEO says is the reason that he's not hiring people is not important is ridiculous.
Maria, you have people on the show who are expressing a view of one company with potentially, and we don't know what they're going to say. I made a mistaken comment. I regret. Those CEOs are coming on. They're making a comment. Who knows if they're making it for political reasons, why they're making it. The bottom line,
they're
Maria,
making it
is
because
we have
they can't
data.
Afford the legislation.
Maria,
that's why
we
they're
have
making
data.
It.
We have data collected unambiguously.
What is your data?
Agencies.
What does your data tell you about making this law less expensive for businesses and individuals?
The law, my data tells you can look at, if your listeners want to cut through the stuff you're saying, look at the data.
Right.
Go to the Kaiser Family Foundation, does an unambiguous survey every year of all employers, and over the last 5 years since Obamacare has passed, the premium growth of employer insurance has been the slowest in measured history. That is a fact.
Yeah.
Do not tell me what some CEO
says. I don't need to go
to
the Kaiser Foundation when I know what my friend is paying for healthcare, $1,000, and it was $500, or what I know a business is paying, it was here and now it's here. All I need to know is what people are saying. I can't spend this money on activity. I can't spend this money hiring people because I'm spending this money on health care. Do you think that in the first 2 years of President Obama's presidency, when he had both houses of Congress, he should have focused instead of on health care?
It's pretty brutal. It's pretty brutal. And that's because the left really has no answers to any of these questions. Okay, now it is time for some things I hate. Let's do it. Alrighty, so let's begin with Ben Carson. So Ben Carson was apparently offered a slot in the Trump administration, rather, as Secretary of Education. And here was, his spokesman said that Carson didn't take it, and here's why. It says, Dr. Carson was never offered a specific position, this is according to Armstrong Williams, so I know, but everything was open to him. Dr. Carson feels he has no government experience. He's never run a federal agency. The last thing he would want to do would be to take a position that could cripple the presidency. The reason this is a thing I hate is because there were those of us who said during the primaries that Carson was hanging on, despite the fact that he had no chance, for self-aggrandizement, that this whole run was a bit of a lark for Dr. Carson after a certain point when it was clear he could no longer win. And now here comes his guy saying that he can't take a job at a federal agency because he wouldn't know how to handle it. He was running for the federal presidency. He was running for the office that runs the federal agencies. And the real reason that Dr. Carson stayed in so long is because Dr. Carson wanted to build up his data bank so that after he was done, he could use that data bank for advertising and fundraising and all the other things that people use data banks for. But again, it is just annoying that for weeks after Carson's loss in Iowa, he kept saying that he was still in it to win it and that it wasn't a scam and he truly wanted to be president. That quote from Armstrong Williams basically does away with that. Okay, other things that I hate. So Lady Gaga, she's back, and Lady Gaga now has an essay at Harper's Bazaar, in which she explains that women in America are afraid. Here's what she says. She says, growing up, I was always told I was a rebel. People would say things like, you're defiant, and why are you dressed that way? But I continued to do what I wanted and wear what I wanted because clearly I haven't changed. For a long time, though, there was shame that I carried with me. I'm Italian Catholic, blah, 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 blah. And then she gets to Donald Trump. She gets to Donald Trump later in here. She says the women are in America are living in fear. Women today in America are living in fear, right? They're fighting for their lives is what she actually says. She says that women are fighting for their lives after Donald Trump's election. It's an amazing thing, right? She says that here we were in 2016, and the fact that sort of language that was being used to talk about women was everywhere. On TV, in politics, was eye-opening. I felt depressed and hurt by it because that's what that kind of language does. Then I watched our incredible First Lady Michelle Obama talk in New Hampshire about how hurt she felt seeing it too. She talked about how women are often afraid to say anything because we're worried that we will appear weak and we'll be told we're being over-the-top, dramatic, emotional, but we're not. We're fighting for our lives. Okay, so I said that Trump's comments on women were pretty despicable all the way through the campaign. The idea that women are fighting for their lives in America is absurd, okay? They're not roving band of red hat wearing Trumpsters who are going around murdering women. This is just silly towns. Now, I will acknowledge that I think that after a lot of people took lightly a lot of the things that Trump was saying about women, I can understand why a woman would be upset about that. I do. I understand why Lady Gaga would be upset about that, which is the first time I've ever said the phrase, I understand why Lady Gaga anything. But it is amazing that the sort of charged language the left is now using, that women are fighting for their lives in America. Women are not fighting for their lives in America. You want to go to a place where women are fighting for their lives, they're all over the world. Lady Gaga can jet there in her private jet. Lady Gaga certainly isn't fighting for her life. She just doesn't like the results of an election. That's her prerogative. But the exaggeration, the charged language, the over-the-top stuff, all that does is drive people into the arms of Trump because they figure that if all these people are saying crazy things about Trump, then Trump must be right. Okay, for better or for worse, that's the country in which we now live. So tomorrow we'll be back. I'll give you the update from University of Wisconsin-Madison, where things are apparently heating up and getting crazy. And we'll let you know how that goes. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. Folks, we'll get some more on this in just 1 second. First, Joe Biden's policies, you know, I'm not a fan. I think it's pretty stupid, but you know what else is stupid? Not having life insurance. Getting life insurance will give you peace of mind, knowing that if something were to happen to you, your family could cover expenses while getting back on their feet. Policy Genius has licensed award-winning agents and technology that makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from America's top insurers in just a few clicks to find that lowest price. Their team of licensed experts is on hand to help you through the process. Even if you already have a life insurance policy through work, it might not offer enough protection for your family's needs, and it might not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies starting at just $292 per year for $1 million in coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid those unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, which means they don't have the incentive to recommend one insurer over another. Save time, save money, provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head on over to policygenius.com/Shapiro to get your free life insurance quotes. See how much you could save. That's policygenius.com/Shapiro, policygenius.com/Shapiro.